Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 101, recorded Thursday, October 25th, 2012. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: future of mileage tracking tools and bursting the travel bubble with food and beer. Coming to you again from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, back after a couple of month hiatus, call it summer break. The episode 100 celebrations, I guess, ran a little long. Hey, last week, Jeremy Phillips tweeted, "Listening to Travel Commons by Mark Peacock, episode 100, while en route from Atlanta to Seattle. I kind of miss the bathroom acoustics, but love the podcast." Well, Jeremy, I was thinking of recording at least the intro to this episode in one of the Travel Commons studios bathrooms, but thought, I don't know, that would like miss the whole point, because it's supposed to be a hotel bathroom. So I'll see if I can get my act together enough for the next episode to do a little bit of a throwback recording from a hotel bathroom on the road. But not a lot of travel since the last episode. Two flights to San Francisco, a day trip to Atlanta, though my arrivals in each place had some interesting twists. For all these trips, I had car service arranged to pick me up from the airport and take me back. I tell you that the cost of and hassles of car rentals just seems to be on an upward spiral. We talked about this in past episodes about costs, not so much the rental cost itself, but all the add-on fees and surcharges and taxes. Indeed, in an October 2009 blog post that I wrote about skipping rental cars, I looked at my receipts from rentals in LAX, San Francisco, SeaTac, and Philadelphia, actually downtown Philadelphia, and found that the add-on charges increased my final bill anywhere from 27 to 51%. I certainly don't think those just have gone down in the subsequent 3 years. The hassles of car rental are just, they're just off-putting. I mean, airports are reclaiming close-in car rental sites to expand parking. They're pushing the rental companies further out and into these consolidated centers. I mean, I've timed trips from, I was at Phoenix and BWI, Baltimore, Washington International. I've timed like the bus rides, and it's been 30 minutes to get from the terminal to the rental cars. I mean, that's just from Chicago to BWI, it's only 2 hours. So adding another 30 minutes just to trundle out to get a rental car, that's just silly. So with all of that, I mean, I've had little problem justifying the cost of a car to haul me between the airport and my locations. But I'll tell you, even hire cars are not without their hassles. In Atlanta, it took me 3 phone calls to the driver and to the car service to figure out where to meet the car. I mean, unlike, say, O'Hare or LaGuardia, I guess there are different places you can surface kind of from that underground walkway, underground subway. Apparently, I followed the wrong ground transportation signs and ended up all the way at the wrong end of the airport. I mean, it was no problem, but, maybe just a 10-minute delay. My last trip to San Francisco, though, was a bit more problematic. I mean, I text the driver, "I'm here, and, here's the door I'm at." Not a big opportunity for location confusion at SFO Terminal 3. So I'm standing there. A couple of cars pull up. A guy gets in one, a woman in another. 5 minutes go by. I mean, where's the car that he said was a minute away? Turns out the guy who got into one of the cars, one of those cars in front of me, had actually gotten into mine. I mean, he told the driver his name, which to the non-native English-speaking driver sounded like Peacock, and off they went. Except when I was still texting the driver, which confused him when he thought I was in the back seat. Somewhere on the 101 South, the driver and the passenger figure out the mix-up. The car comes back to SFO, picks me up, leaving my doppelganger, whose last name turns out sounds nothing like Peacock, wandering sort of aimlessly on the sidewalk looking for his long-gone car. All this reinforces the feeling that there's just nothing about travel nowadays that just works. Thank you. So following up, for those not following the various Travel Commons sites, Twitter, Facebook, the Travel Commons website, look, I don't do Pinterest because, well, I'm a guy, and I don't do Tumblr because I'm over 25 years old. Anyhow, for those of you who aren't following all these various sites, here's a couple of pointers to some content that didn't make it into the iTunes feed. First, I did follow through on the threat, the promise I made at the end of the last episode, to do my own Chicago version of the One City 5 Hour Sprint Tours that United used to put in their Hemispheres magazine. Now, last year, I did the Frankfurt tour while I was on a long layover between Mumbai and Chicago. I videoed the results. It's on the Travel Commons site as video number 2. I mean, I had a great time doing that tour, seeing new areas of Frankfurt rather than flipping through my iPad in the United Lounge. I had such a great time that I wanted to offer up a similar tour to people with long layovers at O'Hare, whether planned or otherwise. While the Frankfurt video was a one-day affair, shot on my iPhone and edited in iMovie on the flight back home, the Chicago video turned out to be a lot more work. Of course, I had to create the tour rather than following someone else's, and the constraints of the format started and ended O'Hare, 5 hours long, which, by the way, I failed. Mine sort of clocked in at just over 6, using only public transit and trying to show something other than the usual photo op sites. It made for some tough choices. Also, I wanted to provide detailed transit and walking directions, showing street signs to crossings. I built a detailed Google trip map for the show notes, because one of my frustrations with United's Frankfurt article was that I kept getting lost, which cut into my already limited time budget. So anyhow, I posted it on the Travel Commons site and the Facebook page about a month ago. I didn't push it through the iTunes feed because I thought it would be too big of a download and wouldn't be of interest to everyone. The Travel Commons Facebook community actually had some good things to say. Lisa Besso's comment voiced a common theme. She said, "Wouldn't it be great to have these for all major hubs where we all spend too much time?" Well, Lisa, I thought the same thing, and I got to thinking about this. Now, if you think through the top 10 U.S. hubs, Atlanta, O'Hare, DFW, Denver, Phoenix, Minneapolis, Houston, Detroit, Newark, San Francisco, how many of these would you do in a 5 hour sort of city slash neighborhood tour without needing a rental car? Now, San Francisco is an easy one. I mean, you get on BART, although the trains are kind of gross, but you can get on BART and off you go. And obviously San Francisco, very walkable town. Now, Newark, immediately you kind of think New Jersey, but actually, you can take the PATH train to downtown Manhattan from the airport. The terminal's a little far out, but you can grab that PATH train to downtown Manhattan, get off actually at the old World Trade Center, station, and you can walk around the Financial District or even up through, say, Tribeca and Greenwich Village. Atlanta, now my voice starts to trail off a little bit. Atlanta, I guess you could do downtown and Buckhead via MARTA, that subway system. I don't know Atlanta all that well. Denver, I mean, you've sort of landed in the middle of a buffalo herd, way the hell in the middle of nowhere. I don't know, maybe you could catch a bus down to Lodo, down to, lower Denver. I don't know. Again, my voice starts to trail off after that. So if anybody else has any other ideas, pass them along. Bob Fennerty and Robbie Smith also left comments. Both compared the O'Hare video to Anthony Bourdain's layover series. Bob said, it's very fun, like watching an amateur version of the layover. Robbie liked it because you could knock it off in an afternoon, unlike Bourdain's 2 to 3 day layover. Never had a layover that lasted that long. Anyhow, if you haven't seen it already, go to the Travel Commons website, or it's up on the Facebook page too. Check it out. Leave some comments. Actually, I've created a new video category on the Travel Commons website. You can find it on the right hand nav bar if you want to quickly find last year's Frankfurt video. And as I mentioned before, send along your thoughts on other layover tours if you have them. Another blog post follows up on a topic from the last episode about my sort of Great Circle tour through the Mid-South, I-65, sort of from top to bottom, from Chicago to the Gulf Coast, then across US 90 to New Orleans, and then back up I-55 and I-57 back up to Chicago. Now, listeners who follow my social media natterings, I guess, on Twitter and Untappd have seen my food and beer comments along the tour and asked for a summary, which I posted on the site in August, a city-by-city listing of the restaurants and bars that I thought were the best, along with a link to a Flickr photo set pulling together some of my better shots, though, you know, probably a little overdone with Instagram filters. If you're visiting Nashville or Louisville or Memphis soon, check that out. And then finally, a follow-up on episode 100's other topic, that would be breaking up with American Airlines. I don't know, it sort of feels like one step forward, two steps back. You know, one of my biggest complaints in that rant that I did in episode 100 was the age of American's fleet. You know, the MD-80s that have been around for 25 to 30 years. I mean, they're small, they're dingy, they're uncomfortable, they're dark. And, you know, in my experience, they've been more and more prone to maintenance delays. Well, last month I flew on a new American 737-800. I mean, that it was a phenomenal plane. It was a great plane. I mean, huge luggage bins. You know, they've obviously picked up some of the styling cues from the 787 Dreamliner with sort of the, you know, the barrel ceiling. They got a little bit of the off-white mood lighting that that Virgin America does in their A320s. But what I really liked also was that in coach they had regular electrical outlets, you know, between the seats. So I mean, it was just a huge upgrade from the MD-80s, especially the ones that American picked up in the TWA merger. Those are the worst of all. So really good forward movement on the planes, which then gets completely offset and more by seats coming loose on their old airplanes. And I don't know, I don't have that much of a problem with that. I can see it. I can see how it's disconcerting, but, you know, at the end of the day, stuff happens. The bigger issue is really sort of the disgruntled pilots that are causing flight delays through sort of a work-to-rule and, you know, writing up multiple maintenance ticket campaigns. I mean, you know, the new planes are great, but, you know, you got to be able to depend upon that schedule to get you from point A to point B at least sort of plus or minus 30 minutes. So I got to tell you, as much as I love those new planes, I'm just sort of completely off American until they get the schedule thing cleared up. Hey, if you have a question, a story, a comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com. You can use your voice memo app on your iPhone or something like virtual recorder on your Android phone to record and send in an audio comment. Haven't had one of those in a while. You can always send a Twitter message to M. Peacock, like Jeremy did that I mentioned earlier. You can post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page, like Lisa and Robbie and Bob. Or you can always go old school, like Sarah Bargava did around on episode 100, and post your thoughts on the website at travelcommons.com. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is the future of mileage tracking tools. 2 years ago, actually in episode 85 to be precise, I talked with Michael Komarnitsky, the founder and CEO of GoMiles, about his year-old mileage and awards point web tracking service. Well, last month, Michael sold GoMiles to Traxo, a trip aggregation and travel management site. I caught up with him last week to get his thoughts on where the whole sort of mileage awards tracking market is going. I first asked him, though, to remind us what GoMiles did for the traveler.
The purpose of GoMiles was to help people take control of their frequent flyer miles once and for all. The situation we saw is that people have all these accounts all over the place, and they just can't figure out how to unlock the value trapped inside all those accounts. And we thought of that as four things. First, let's help you manage all of your miles in one place. Two, protect them from expiring. Three, help you earn more faster. And fourth, help you redeem better.
What was it, last month you sold Go Miles to Trax? So why don't you sort of walk through what you decided to do there?
It happened last month, September of 2012. Interestingly, Go Miles was conceived in September of 2009. So 3 years almost to the day between conception and an acquisition. What was going on is that my co-founder and team, we were seeing good traction with Go Miles and lots of enthusiasm from our users. But in order to make Go Miles a sustainable business, it had to get to a certain scale, like any web business does. And what we saw we were bumping up against was that the segment of customers who are really passionate about miles is a relatively small one. But the bigger segment of the market that people are looking for services for are for services that provide mileage as part of a larger solution.
As you got deeper and deeper, kind of your sense of it was that the fat part of the curve for traveler behavior, mileage tracking, award tracking, is much more compelling as a component of sort of a broader travel tracking service than it is sort of as a standalone entity.
Exactly. And look, Mark, you've seen probably $5 million in venture funding go into this frequent flyer management problem over the last 3 years, including, you know, towards Go Miles. And, you know, we're all trying to crack the code there. But in my observation, Go Miles, nor has anybody else really achieved that critical traction that means hundreds of thousands and going towards millions of users that you can build a sustainable business on.
So the combination now of Go Miles and Trax, so what does that combined offer look like to a frequent traveler?
The essential thought here is it's kind of like your entire travel wallet. So, and it makes it, and it's all automated and streamlined and very simple and easy for you to use. If you were to go through and you have your accounts with Traxo, Traxo will automatically monitor those accounts for any purchases or activity that goes on in them and package them together. Let me give an example. Let's say you're going to Italy and you're staying, you know, you bought tickets on American and you're staying at some hotels. As you book all those tickets, Traxo will automatically identify those and be monitoring those trips for any changes. So it's itinerary management and making it having a very simplified, streamlined view of your itinerary for your trips, monitoring of your itinerary for any changes or issues that come up. And then the miles actually gets integrated into that. So you get to see that your mileage balance has gone up. You know, conversely, if you haven't purchased any tickets in a long time and your mileage balance is starting to coming near the expiration, Traxo will send you email alerts saying that your miles are about to expire. So it's beyond miles. It's about the overall travel experience and helping you have a simplified, streamlined travel experience from the time of booking to, you know, being on the plane, sipping your cocktail.
How does that compare with, say, a TripIt or either the free version TripIt or their paid version TripIt Pro?
Yeah, there is a number of similarities between TripIt and Traxo. I think some of the differences is just the notion of badges and trophies and ways to sort of see how your traveling compares to others. So, you know, are you, you know, the travel ninja who's on the, you know, who truly is in the top 1% of all travel in terms of how far you travel? You know, now you have a way to prove that and to show that and compare that with your colleagues or your friends. You know, TripIt does have a pro product which involves mileage management, but it's pretty basic. And, you know, where we're going and putting these two things together is a much deeper mileage management piece that is still part of the free offering.
As you look at sort of future trends, both for yourself as well as for awards management and frequent flyer management, what do you see are the key trends going forward?
Yeah, one trend I see is, and I've alluded to this before, is I think we're going to see a shakeout of these pure play mileage management solution providers because people are casting around trying to find a standalone business there, and I think it's a pretty lean place to try to build a really compelling solution for consumers. So I think we're going to see a trend away from pure plays towards being part of larger solutions. For Traxo, I think the move is towards further automation of this stuff so that, you know, you don't need to do it. The trend I'm really excited about is sort of building in place of wizards and recommendations for things so that not only can we be tracking what you're doing, but we can tell you what to do based upon the data we have that says you should do step one, step two, step three based upon what you've said. And, you know, that's sort of a social recommendation engine that makes it very easy for you to do, you know, what we think is the right thing. Now you might try to do something else and that's fine, but it's just you trying to use our data and our algorithms and intelligence to give you a simple recommendation of what to do. And then I think a third trend is the whole travel segment. There's a ton of money there, but there is a ton of competition at every step in the value chain. And so when you see things like the cease and desist letters happening from Delta or American, what it means is that this sort of service and this sort of business needs to grow up and show value, not just to consumers, but to all the other people in the ecosystem that it works with. And so I think we're going to see more ways that providers like Traxo and others are partnering with companies like American and Delta to deliver value to the airlines and use that formal relationship to build an even better product for their end consumers. You know, for me personally, I'm really excited about working with Traxo. As I mentioned earlier, I also just had my second daughter 10 days ago. So my life is full of excitement involving miles and dirty diapers right now.
Well, congratulations, Michael, both professionally and personally. I should have traded those, the order of that. Congratulations personally and professionally. Well, listen, Michael, thank you very much for coming back on Travel Commons and talking to us about frequent flyer travel and about kind of where frequent flyer tools are going to go in the future. Great insight, and I really appreciate you stopping by. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is bursting the travel bubble with food and beer. As I mentioned earlier, those who follow me on Twitter and Untappd is sort of a foursquare for beer nerds, they see a lot of posts and pictures of food and beer. Though I guess, you know, if you think about it, it should not be that surprising. I mean, I think travel, food, and alcohol, beer, wine, scotch, bourbon, keep going. They sort of naturally go together. I mean, if you're interested in one, you're interested in them all. And it's all about being interested in exploring cultures. One of the main reasons that we travel, voluntarily that is to experience other people, other cultures. And if you want to get deeper into a culture, it's much easier to eat and drink with them than it is to marry them. Not that marrying them is a bad thing. It's just, I don't know, a bit more permanent. Or perhaps that's sort of the old school Catholic in me talking. In past episodes, we've talked about how frequent travelers often kind of float above the day-to-day activities, the reality of the cities they're visiting. And they kind of float above it in sort of a travel bubble, you know, kind of like sort of Glinda the Good Witch in Wicked. In one of those episodes, I talked about how I like using public transportation, sort of skipping the airport limos or private car services as a way to sort of pop that bubble. But in my trips this summer to San Francisco and through the Midwest, I'll tell you, the search for local food and local beer also popped that travel bubble. And I got to tell you, it's a hell of a lot more fun, you know, eating and drinking with people than it is wrestling with a fare card machine in Brooklyn. Now, this is more than just about sort of skipping restaurant chains, sort of bypassing Olive Garden for, you know, Joe's Burger Shack. Searching out a San Francisco farmer's market, for example, took me up through, kind of skirted around the edge of the Tenderloin District and sort of had me dodging sort of cup-shaking panhandlers much further up Market Street than I'd ever had before. Searching for Nashville's version of the Chicago hot dog, that is, hot chicken, took me way off the usual sort of Broadway Street tourist drag to a place called Bolton's, a squat cinder block building in what felt like a bit of a sketch section of East Nashville. Ended up with some very good and very spicy fried chicken, of course, because I ordered it spicy. So it was self-inflicted. We ended up eating under a wheezing air conditioner as a steady stream of neighborhood folk banged open the screen door, ordering their Friday hot chicken and sort of just catching up with the owner. Hunting down local beers has been just as rewarding. Walking from San Francisco's Union Square to the edge of the Soma neighborhood to find this city beer store took me a good bit out of the tourist zone. I ended up drinking local Magnolia beer, talking with a group of guys who were stopping off for one on their way to the bus stop. Then following Google Maps off I-65 in Birmingham, Alabama, I found myself parking in what looked like a neighborhood trying hard to redevelop, so I could try a beer at Avondale Brewing. To do this, I keep a running list of web clippings in Evernote, kind of the restaurants, beer, wine bars, breweries I want to visit. I also use social media. In episode 96, I talked about how I use Untappd, Food Spotting, and Chowhound, as well as asking the Twitterverse for ideas. But that's just so I have a starting point for my wanderings. Searching for new places also forces me to break that travel bubble wall between visitor, that is me, and the residents. In Louisville, I headed over to the Louisville Beer Store in the downtown Nulu district. Drinking a couple of beers and talking to the owner, he said I just had to visit his other place called the Holy Grail. It's an old church that he's converted to a beer bar. So while I was sitting at the bar then at the Holy Grail talking to some other folks, a guy told me that I had to visit New Orleans Bywater District if I wanted the latest in good, local, non-tourist, artisanal food there. So 3 days later, I was actually driving into New Orleans along US 90, having been there many times, but I'd never heard of the Bywater District. A little web searching on the iPhone, and I found my way there. Ended up having a great dinner sitting at the bar of Maurepas Foods, kind of a very local place with neighborhood folks and very good food. You know, frequent travelers tend toward a rhythm, a pattern that allows them to quickly and efficiently navigate the hassles of today's travel experience. But, you know, there's a thin line between efficiency and a rut. Inhabiting that travel bubble sort of straddles that line. It does take effort to pop that bubble. And, nothing like a little good food and good beer to help that popping along. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Trail Commons podcast number 101. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music on today's show is kind of split. It's from Mevio's Music Alley. I got two songs from there, Science vs. Romance by Rilo Kiley and Voodoo Dub by Cyrus FX. They're at music.mevio.com. And then from longtime Travel Commons listener Sara Bargava, Not Enough Inside You Part 2 from his Chromatique album that came out at the end of last year and that we featured in episode 96. Check out the show notes for links to the Mevio site and to Sarab's site. And as always, if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio file, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or Facebook, write them on the Travel Commons wall, M. Peacock at Twitter, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, post comments on the Facebook wall, on the website. You guys make doing this podcast easier because you give me content, which I always desperately need. So until we talk again, travel safe. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now. Is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up in
when there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling, crying into the phone.